But I had a real kind of, you know, a real awakening in my faith through the Charismatic Renewal at the end of the 70s when I was still in secondary school. And it was really a powerful kind of, you know, sense of God's love. And it was an interesting one because my ambitions were all about music and I suppose to some degree journalism as well. Those are my two big areas, were journalism and music. And they're still with me, actually, interestingly. But the thing was, in the context of that, just the fact that I kind of had always heard that God loved me and I knew all those things and I knew the stories and I knew the Bible stories. And I suppose I was a reasonably devout child in the sense that I was an altar boy and it was all those kinds of things.
How much did your secondary school life affect you? And where did you go to school?
I went to Clonkeen College, and it was fine. I mean, it was in terms of it was an academic school. I had a very good art teacher down there, and a couple of very good other very good teachers as well. But in a way, the awakening was very much away from secondary school. It was just a friend invited me along. In fact, I wanted more than anything else to be a musician. That was really what I wanted. And I wanted to be involved in rock music and all that kind of stuff. And really,
most teenagers do, right?
When I was 14 or 15 and I was invited to play in the local folk group, that was the gig, you know, it was very much a gig is the way I saw it. And there were, you know, hundreds stuffed. The church was stuffed. So it was the way to go, you know.
This was your big debut.
This was my big debut. It certainly was. But the interesting thing was that we ran out of songs very pretty quickly because we were young and we didn't know what we were doing. And the onus was on me for some reason or other to come up with new material. So that was how I ended up at a charismatic meeting because somebody said, "We've lots of songs." And
that. So that was the hook for you?
Yeah. And in fairness, I started, I went, and it was powerful. It was really, I mean, the Holy Spirit turned up and I just felt God's love in a really, really powerful way. And it was, when I say it wasn't entirely instant, but I knew from the absolute minute I walked through the door there was something going on there that was very special.
And was this a form of rebellion? Because it wouldn't have been mainstream, would it, for most teenagers to be going along to, prayer groups or charismatic prayer groups for that matter?
Yeah, it was actually. Yeah. And in fact, it was rebellion against the folks. It was rebellion against other things that were going on. It was a really individuating time actually for me. And the thing was, at the same time, there was substance to it. Like I was able to come into school and go, "Lads, you've got to experience this. It's unbelievable. You know, there's something really powerful going on here." So that was it, you know.
And during that time, who were your music heroes, your rock heroes?
Well, I mean, I was mad about the Beatles. And the Beatles, the Beatles were broken up 10 years at that stage. But nevertheless, there was a lot of very, very interesting stuff going on at the end of the 70s and the early 80s. There was the whole New Wave thing that happened. The punk thing had happened. Wasn't that interested. But the New Wave thing was really exciting. And moving in towards the New Romantic thing. And then kind of that whole kind of dance thing that happened in the 80s was really... But, you know, I was gigging. I mean, I was gigging the whole way through. I was gigging in secondary school. I was gigging. I remember that, you know, the night before my Irish exam for my leaving cert, I was gigging. You know, it's all I wanted to do. I was not interested. I went to college in what became DCU and I did communications out there and I just thought it was, you know, I mean, it was fine. I did fine and I got my degree when I was still quite young. But I wanted more than anything else for it to be about the music, you know.
So it's really in your blood, basically. You just can't shit. And probably part of your genes at this stage, is it?
Yeah, totally. And it moves me, you know. I mean, even now, I mean, what I discovered through my life with Jesus was that actually when you combine faith and music together, something extra special happens. But, you know, music speaks to your soul. It just gets you. You know, it gets you that other things don't reach there, you know. So it was really powerful. And you know, the thing is, because I'd had, you know, I'd gone to college music and then I learned how to play guitar and then I became a songwriter and, you know, all these things were happening at the same time as I was doing communications in DCU. And it just, you know, I was just a man in a hurry, really.
Sure, aren't most teenagers?
Yeah, exactly. And by that stage, I was 19 leaving college and I kind of went into RTE and I got a job by accident on the night switch in RTE. And of course, what happened then was my head was turned because I was surrounded by people who were in broadcasting. And because I'd always been interested in journalism, and there was a journalistic element to communications as well, I would have started in 84. So I started in RTE in 84, and I just took... I mean, I just went, well, this is what I want to do. So then by 1986, I was presenting. I was on the telly, and, you know, it was onwards and upwards from there.
And did you enjoy that?
No, I hated it, actually. It was terrible. I could not believe how awful it was. Now, I got some fantastic training from very, very good people, but I couldn't cope with the stress of live television. And then the other thing I couldn't cope with, actually, was I couldn't cope with, and this will make you laugh, I couldn't cope with celebrity. I couldn't cope with wherever I went, I was known. And it was a bit of a trauma, to be honest with you, because I'd always assumed that what I needed to do in my life was to be famous. And once I was famous, life would be fine. But actually, it was a real moment for me, realizing after 2 years of, and by the time the second year of Borderline had come to an end, I could go nowhere in the country. It was really, everywhere I went, it was autographs and photographs and all that kind of, that was what was going on. Happened then was Maria Doyle, who actually was I was presenting with me, herself and her band, the Black Velvet Band, were just being signed, and I joined them and we went off and we toured America then.
What parts of the States did you go to?
Well, it was mostly the East, though we did do a little bit on kind of around you know, Los Angeles and stuff, but it was like up and down the East Coast, 3 or 4 months on a tour, big tours actually, and we played with, you know, we played with big acts, like at the time 10,000 Maniacs, we would have Aerosmith and various other people would have been around. Katie Lang was just launching her career. Lenny Kravitz, I broke Lenny Kravitz's Hammond organ, and I just came in. I'm very heavy on keyboards, and I just came slammed into this, you know, big C chord, and literally the keys just flew off into the distance. And you know, you killed my organ. It's terrible. My Hammond organ is destroyed. But anyway, so but that was it's like seeing the world, seeing it from the top, and again, another kind of difficult experience for me. Away from home for 3 or 4 months, away from the people that I loved, and actually away from what was a nascent community, because we had started Emmaus kind of in the mid-80s, right as I was beginning to come onto the telly. So actually, what was that little group of people who were praying in my parents' sitting room, our front room, which then went on to become the Emmaus community, I was missing them desperately, and I was missing the lady who turned out to be my wife, Joanne, and I was missing all that, and I was missing the kind of reality of that. And this, you know, being in this very, very overblown, you know, playing places like Radio City in New York and, you know, playing huge, huge venues. I mean, one of the first gigs that we ever did with 10,000 Maniacs, there were 12,000 people there. And I just looked out and went, this is absolutely unbelievable. 12,000 people in a venue. But at the same time, again, I always felt like, and I'm not even 25 at this stage. I'm still in my early 20s.
How did you keep your feet in the ground during this time?
I don't think I did. Yeah, I think I just went. I mean, I think what happened was I was having this experience of God's love, and I was having a kind of a beginning of a community experience with the people at home, and that was very rooting. But once I was out on the road, I was unhappy, because, you know, by this stage, I knew that if everybody else in the band was taking a load of drink and drugs, that wasn't going to work for me. Yeah. You know, I was aware that wasn't going to work, but at the same time, I in my life was going, what else is going to work?